We're broken people now. We're burning out.
If you are wise, you'll listen to me. Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to the Stretch Goose Podcast. It's episode 75. Thank you all for jumping on and paying attention to my babble for the next hour or so. You guys know that this is the podcast is part of the Fonts Media Network at this point. You're fully aware that there's a world ablaze if you want, you know, government and political stuff. If you want random chatter, then you know... You cross the street and you go to Random Thoughts. And if you want just straight news like this one, you come to this one. And of course, if you want history about mundane, pointless items like paperclips, pencils, soda cans, shit like that, then you go right over there. And of course, if you want to go to the Lost Tapes of the Stretch Goose Podcast /network, then you can listen to over 200 episodes of anything and everything that I've been doing since the dawn of time. Most of it is terrible, in my opinion, but it's worth it if you just want to, you know, see the evolution journey, whatever the hell you want to call it. Apparently, there is a live-action remake of How to Train Your Fucking Dragon. We really need this movie. Because the other four movies plus TV show did so well that we have to see a CG heavy remake for some fucking reason. And of course, many members of the voice cast are going to be donning outfits. Gerard Butler is wearing a 90-pound costume for some reason. I don't understand it. I don't get it. It's a fucking movie that just doesn't need to be made. I just can't understand this. So Collider is reporting that this is a movie that has fans buzzing with excitement of a live action adaptation. Here's my thing about live action adaptations. It's mostly, if you're going to do a live action adaptation of a fucking cartoon, a CG cartoon, you're going to get the dragon, right? It's not a real dragon. You can't exactly, you know, find one on the street, so you're going to end up with a fucking CG version of the dragon. The only thing that is human is going to be a bunch of people in costumes staring at green screen tennis balls and yelling into it, and it's there's no reason for it. It's also the same thing when they said they do a live action version of fucking Mufasa coming up, you know, or the Lion King or whatever. That was it's a cartoon of animals. Where's the live action? It's a CG heavy lion. It doesn't make sense. There's no fucking reason for it. But feel free to convince me. Go to the comment section of whatever platform you're listening to this podcast on and tell me why. Explain to me why this live action versions of CG films are necessary. Please let me know. I would like to know. Also, according to Toy Book, I guess Hasbro's got problems again. The company is reducing its workforce to empower teams to make quicker decisions and deliver innovation. So for some odd reason, these guys are losing money hand over fist because I'm assuming nobody is buying their shit anymore. This has been going on for a few years. Plus, they've also overextended their fucking debt borrowing. In my opinion, these are all my opinions, kids, this unbelievable overextension to make a movie production studio called AllSpark so we can get another Transformer film upon another Transformer film, and then apparently we're going to also get My Little Pony is going to get a movie, Monopoly is going to get a movie, because we need to fucking have these things in film. I get Transformers. I do. Kids, everybody out there, before you flood the comments or give me any negative reviews and call me a bunch of names, please listen. I get Transformers. I don't get My Little Pony. I don't understand why we need a Monopoly game into a movie. Unless we're going to Jumanji that shit and the fucking into the board they go by some magic sorcery crap. There's no other. I can't wrap my head around it. But if you think it's justifiable, please comment below. Let me know what the fucking why. But apparently by doing all this stuff, they're having problems. So they're reducing their workforce. They missed their Q3 earnings. were off by quite a bit from what I understand. From what I understand, their year-to-date revenue is $3 billion, down 18% prior year if you exclude the impact of the E1 divestiture. Total revenue was down 8%, largely driven by the same drivers of Q3. And of course, we have to blame something, right? We can't just sit there and blame, you know, obvious shit like a movie studio and dumping a bunch of fucking money into that and then not making your money back, which is kind of what happened with Transformers 1 and Rise of the Beasts. And what else did they put? Another Transformer, Bumblebee. It's nothing to do with that. No. We are going to say that lower volume from exited brands and reduced closeouts offset growth in licensed consumer products and volume increases in select brands like Transformers, Beyblade, and Furby. And of course, the continued softness in Nerf and action figures, particularly Star Wars, also contributed to the decline in the quarter. So they're blaming the Star Wars toys and the Nerf guns for not making enough fucking money to offset their losses. I don't know if this is a shot across the old bow there to Disney, but I know they have a licensing agreement coming up. They got to renew that bitch. I'm wondering if this is their negotiating tactic, which... yeah, I don't know. We'll see. We are continued to prioritizing profitable revenue while our closeout volume was down 70% year over year and contribute to about a fourth of the revenue decline. It drove about 1.5 points of gross margin benefit. Kids, Hasbro is having another year where it just sucks. And a lot of it is because they made some decisions. Primarily in pushing into movies. Movies is not a in my opinion, it's not a profit business. You invest $200 million in a budget, you add another $200 million in marketing and what have you. And then of course, if the movie only does $150 million, you don't exactly make any money. Or even if you hit $200 million, you don't even break even. You would have to do $600 million just to make a couple of bucks. And that just emphasizes the issue with a toy company diving into something that just, they're not generating enough films to produce at least a couple of bucks. I mean, they're just doing like a Transformer movie here, Transformer movie there. They're supposedly got a bunch of stuff in development with a lot of their toy products. I personally am not excited about the future of Hasbro. Just like I'm not exactly excited about the future of Mattel. They've also are making some decisions after making billions of dollars on Barbie. They're pushing that into a universe. I am very skeptical about how this is going to help toy companies. Just saying. I just don't see it. I really don't. Well, I know this is crazy, but the Catholics are laying off workers due to undisclosed financial pressure from the Christian Post. All right. Roman Catholic Archdiocese of New York has laid off several workers due to budget issues and financial settlements over sex abuse claims. Cardinal Timothy Dolan, head of the Archdiocese, announced earlier this month that the diocese is laying off 18 employees as part of a financial restructuring of its regional body. The financial reorganization, which also includes selling the Cardinal Cook Building in New York City, which has served as the headquarters, was due to undisclosed financial pressures. The National Catholic Reporter has reported, such pressures are believed to include an overall decline in donations. Especially in recent years due to COVID, we're still blaming COVID, lockdowns, and as well as ongoing financial settlements related to Catholic clergy's funny business. Can't keep their hands off the kids. Yep. Dolan has wrote in a letter to the staff saying he is grateful for the service of those whose positions are being eliminated. Such decisions are never easy, but the current financial crunch that the archdiocese faces and the upcoming move to our new offices in 2025 make this the appropriate time to make some tough decisions. Following the sale of the Cook Building, the regional body's staff and leadership plan to move into a smaller office near St. Patrick's Cathedral. So, well, wonder why the Catholics are losing, donations are down, membership is down. I wonder why. Could it be the sex crimes? How could you, this is one of the things that in churches in general that I've always found interesting. You're going up there preaching the word of God. And of course, you're human, you sin, right? Transgressions, all that, I get it. But you're preaching the word of God and its faith and all that stuff. The whole time, you're banging four or five kids. You're raping children. The whole time, you're having sex with the nuns underneath the church. It's a credibility issue, kids. It's a credibility issue. And it's really sad that has happened to them. And I mean, it's only one of the dioceses. I'm sure there's many more having the same struggle. These guys are to the point of where they're selling off the buildings and stuff. But I'm wondering, when are they going to stop doing this and try to earn the trust of people? Because, like I said, you can't go into that church, look at the priest and go, come on, dude, really? You're asking me for $5 and you're over here in front of a golden altar wearing $500 worth of robes and you're banging the kid on the side? Come on, dude. And I think that's what's going on. I think that's the issue. Of course, I mean, New York passing a Child Victims Act, extending statute of limitations on sex cases has probably also become an issue because now people are coming out of the woodwork. I don't know. This is something that the church is going to have to really work on. They're really going to have to work on their skills. That's just kind of what I think should be going on. They got to work on them skills. All right. This is a story that is crazy. This is from Libs of TikTok. This is where I found it. If you're an X user, go over there. Tons of fun. And it's about a minute and 28.
A child Missing. Her mother, Ashley Rowland, under investigation for allegedly giving her away to a man she was buying meth from. The court papers say in April of 2022, investigators learned a child was missing. A year later, DHS got involved but couldn't find Rowland or her child. They eventually tracked her down at an address in a Moore neighborhood. Rowland told investigators her child was with her father in Georgia. Officers later found that wasn't true. When Rowland was questioned again, she gave a new explanation, this time claiming she gave her daughter, who was two at the time, to a man named Carlos, who she was buying drugs from. Rowland claiming Carlos was the possible father. She also admits she was on drugs and was buying drugs from Carlos when she gave her daughter to him. Court documents say Carlos told Rowland he was going back to Mexico. Now, Moore police are doing everything they can to find the girl, saying, "This is a very active case that we are working diligently on. All leads are being investigated in relation to the location of the child." DHS couldn't comment specifically on the case, but says situations like those described in this affidavit are heartbreaking and unimaginable. Like the rest of the community, Oklahoma Human Services reels in concern for this child's safety.
Yeah. So a mom needs drugs. She got no cash. So she sold her baby. Let that sink in, kids. Let that sink in. I got no words for this. I've got no other than wow. And now we got a kid missing. And has been missing for over almost 2 years at this point. And it's probably somewhere in Mexico, could be dead, nobody knows. All because this mother wanted to get fucking high. Now she's in jail because they arrested her, but it's not, there are no words. I have no words. This story is crazy. It's ridiculous. And unfortunately, there's more of these out there. We really have to work on, as a country, we really have to, I mean, we always talk about regulating guns. If there's anything to regulate in this country, it's drugs. And this is an example why. High as a kite, this woman gave her kid to some fucking random dude and did it for meth. He gave her the drugs. He drove off with the kid. The kid's 4 years old by this point. Maybe she's alive. Maybe she's not. Maybe she's in the, you know, God forbid, she's probably in the sex trafficking business at this point, getting trained. As you know, it's a bad, I know it's a bad phrase, phrasing, bad wording, but yeah, very sad. Very sad. Very sad. Okay, so this is okay. So Trump got elected. Let's do a little. Let's get a little politics. The Boston mayor Michelle Wu says in this clip, "What I think is, I think she should be just fired. There's a way to get rid of a mayor that we got to figure it out." This cannot be, this cannot happen in this country.
What will Boston's response be if these mass deportations take place?
Yeah, look, elections have consequences, and the federal government is responsible for a certain set of actions, and cities, no individual city can reverse or override some parts of that. But what we can do is make sure that we are doing our part to protect our residents in every possible way, that we are not cooperating with those efforts that actually threaten the safety of everyone by causing widespread fear and having large-scale economic impact.
She needs to go. You don't sit there and say straight up, we are not going to participate, help you, or do anything in terms of your federal government, immigration action, all that. She needs to go. If there is anybody with, if Boston had any brain cells, that right there tells you something. She is willing to hide criminals. She's willing to hide illegal activity. She's willing to protect all of those interests, all those bad things that are happening in her city. She's willing to protect it. That's not somebody who's out for the best interests of her citizens. And she's got to go. She's just literally got to go. That's all there is to it. That's it. That's all there is to it. That's all I can say. Just, she has to go. She has to go. This is something I was listening to today, actually. And if you're into podcasting or whatnot, then by all means, listen in. If not, I understand. I understand. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you on the next one. But I'm going to kind of get into this a little bit. This guy gives podcasting tips from what I was gathering out of this, and it's called Podtastic Audio. And he's talking about guest booking scams. It's about 4 minutes long. We're going to come back and forth in on this.
The third scam we have here that targets new podcasters is similar to the sponsorship scam, and that is the guest booking scams. Now, as a new podcaster, especially those that do a lot of guest interviews, so this is kind of how the whole scam works. The pitch is this. A booking agent, let's call him a quote-unquote, pretend booking agent, reaches out claiming they can arrange an interview with a high-profile guest who aligns just perfectly with your show. Wow, isn't that so convenient how this big-time celebrity just randomly will be on my show and randomly that this big-time guest actually fits perfectly with my show. And this big-time guest is also a big fan of your work. They love your podcast, and they are dying to get on it. Wow, imagine the odds on that. As a new podcaster, you're living on cloud nine. You think you have made it to the big time. Now, why is this so convincing? Well, I said as a new podcaster, you want to interview big-name guests on your show. The bigger, the better. The bigger the name, the more credibility your show is going to have. The more popular your show is going to appear. And it just sounds really cool if you, being the independent hobby podcaster that you are, get a chance to interview this massive, massive, big, well-known celebrity. And the fact that they actually are a fan of your show, oh my goodness, that's like the icing on top. Well, here are some red flags to be aware of. And like I said before, they all want money. And this is no different. They will request money to have this big name guest on your show. Well, if you see this big red flag, run away. Legitimate.
Okay. I'm just going to respond to that portion that he said. First, a little bit of the resume. I've been podcasting since 2015 as the Stretch Goose Podcast. I have done roughly 300 to 400 episodes. I've also done many side podcasts, about 20, anywhere between 20 to 25 episodes. I usually don't book guests. I'm usually running things by myself. Well, recently I have decided, I have had a few on recently. And I will say that booking a guest in and of itself is not hard. That part is not hard. It's getting in touch with the person directly or getting in touch with the agency that they may or may be affiliated with, however you want to say it. One of the things that he continues to say in this episode that really drives me nuts, and I think it's a mindset problem, is he sits there and he says that you're a newbie hobby podcaster. If you go into this thinking it's a hobby, you're never going to succeed anyway. You're never going to have the same motivations. They're never going to have the same drive. You're never going to want to improve because it's a hobby. If you go in that way, you're already setting yourself up to fail. If you come into this thing and you take it as, at least 75% seriously, and you really work on your microphone skill, minimal equipment upgrades and, some music, intro, outros, however you want to say this. If you really want to be marginally decent, you have to improve in those areas. So it really is, it really is kind of interesting that he does his entire podcast calling it a hobby. You're already setting the bar low. So for a guy who is selling help to podcasting or selling help to whatever it may be, and you come into it saying it's a hobby or it's something less than an actual business venture, I'm not sure how helpful he's actually being here. Let's hear the rest of this.
Yes. Especially ones that actually love your show will go on your show for free. And most of them do. Of all the guests that I've had on the Chris and Christine show and on the...
Okay, that is also untrue. Yes, there are a bunch of people out there that will go on your show for free. He is not wrong about that. But I will guarantee you that if I were to sit there and call the booking agent for Jason Bateman, for example, he's not coming on my show for free because he has more exposure than I do. So I will have to pay. So for him to say that, he says most guests, if not all, will go on for free, that's bullshit. Denzel Washington isn't walking onto this show without a couple of bucks in his pocket. That's just the truth of it. So I just don't understand why he is even putting that false bullshit out there. It's obviously not true. Now, of course, he can listen to this and he could say, well, I was only talking about, you know, most of the people out there will do it for free. And the ones that I've had on have done it for free and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, but in reality, if you really do want your show to excel or get notoriety, you're going to have to go up a couple of tiers in the guest book and you're going to have to find your wallet. That's just the reality of it. If I'm going to sit here and interview the writer for The Simpsons, although he is not a high valued celebrity in terms of being seen, he's a guy that's going to probably charge me for the interview. Why? Because he's the writer for The Simpsons. Now, if I were to sit there and go to somebody on the street and be like, hey, you want some exposure in a podcast and you want to, you know, we'll do like a whatever and for, you know, he'll do it for free. Yeah, more than likely he'll do it for free. But I've also run into some influencers out there who have also wanted to be paid $100 to $120 to do an interview or to even be on the show. I've run into that as well. So this false representation of booking guests for free or almost always for free is unbelievably not true. Let's keep this party going.
Show here, none of them, not a single one of them, was ever paid a single dime to come on my show as a guest. And I've never charged anybody to be a guest on their show either. I don't see the point in it. Now, these booking scammers will say,
I don't understand why he doesn't see the point in it. You know, there are celebrities, there are talent, there is talent out there that is well known. Like, let's put it like this. Jake Paul, for example, or Mr. Beast, for example. I'm pretty sure they're not working for free on my podcast. Just like I'm pretty sure they're not working for free on his podcast. So for him to sit here and say that he doesn't see the point in charging people or paying people to be on a podcast, he's in a fantasy world. He's in an unbelievable fantasy world. And that's enough for this guy, to be honest. I don't think we should keep playing this or keep going along these lines. But personally, he's been at this for a while, just like any other independent, I guess. But that this guy is a representation of a larger problem in the independent space. They all want to tell you that everything is the slow, organic thing. Okay, let me just say this to all of you aspiring people that want to get into this space. There are roughly 3 to 4 million active podcasts running in just on America alone. And there's roughly 1 million to 2 million being added every day. You know what I should do? I should give you the exact numbers. I could be wrong, but I'm going to look this up. While right now, live, all that, fact check myself. I believe that is the number. How many active podcasts are there? Let's see what it says as I search the webbies. Oh, okay, I had it in reverse. There's 500,000 active podcasts globally. The 3 to 4 million part is all of overall, like the total number. Okay. All right, so how many? See, I fact check myself on my own fucking show. I don't give a shit. How many are added every day? Let me see this real quick. Let me see. Okay. Oh, wow. I was way off on that part. Okay. So that part I was way off. So there are 500,000 podcasts active right now across the world, 4.7 million total across the world. Okay. There are 2,000 podcasts being added daily in our space, daily, globally, worldwide, 2,000. Okay, think of the number in itself. There are 4.2 million podcasts that are inactive, which means there are 4.2 million ideas, 4.2 million people swung the bat and fucking missed. Okay, it's the same thing. It's almost similar to, you know, if you want to play in the NBA, less than 1% get to the NBA out of the thousands upon thousands of people that put on the shorts. Okay, very few. Essentially, the point I'm making with these numbers is very few people are willing to stick to the slow, organic grind, especially when they see celebrities with big money backing from iHeart, from CBS, from name that company, dropping millions of dollars to enter a space, and they flood it with ad buys, they flood it with automatic downloads, they flood it with paid reviews. And I got a story to that as well. You know, there's a podcast called Your Stupid Opinions. And this is a 100% true story. They launched their podcast on a Monday morning, I believe it was. The first episode. I listened to the first episode. I gave it a negative review. Okay? Within an hour, the entire episode was taken down and reloaded the next day. And somehow the next day, my review did not exist on Apple Podcasts. And there were over 1,500 five-star reviews. The real question that I have is, how did that happen? The real question, how did that happen? Do you think there were 1,500 people ready to go saying, oh man, this is some good shit? I don't believe that for a second. It doesn't add up. So they had to have obviously paid for it, because there was only 3 written reviews, which I believe are accurate. I believe that there were 3 people that actually wrote something, but the 1,500 five-star reviews, I don't believe it. It's bullshit. I don't believe it. So when the bigger guys are coming in and they are spending money hand over fist to flood the space, take up the market share, if you will, And they are lying through their teeth in terms of reviews, downloads, all of it. And you've got someone like myself, let's say, who's been at it since 2015. And for some reason, the most downloads he's ever had organically in a year is 2,200. Now, over the course of the time I've been on this, I would say, you know, 8,000 to 10,000 downloads is probably what I have with this podcast. But I've also moved multiple platforms, and I also don't save any of the tracking stuff because, you know, I truly am not in this for the money. But I also see the bullshit around me, so it's not like I'm not aware of what's going on. So if I were to sit there and to say 10,000 downloads for my podcast, okay, within, you know, nearly 9 years of doing this, and have I improved in some areas? Yes. Have I gotten better with my research and my presentation, things like that? I feel like I have. I know people are listening because I did a review contest. Wanted to see who would write a review, earn a couple of bucks, big prize, whatever. And I did get a lot of submissions. I did. And it tells me that there are people listening. It tells me that, you know, I've looked at my numbers for this year, because over the last year and a half, my brother got involved and he's really pushing me to be a little more serious with this. So I've only been tracking for about 6-7 months, you know, what we've got going on. And I've got roughly 60 subscribers total. I never really cared, you know, at the time. I never really cared. But now, you know, having to be being pushed to be better and to know that I've got actual people listening, I'm working on trying to get engagement, right? That's the next phase, right? Now, I say all this to get to the overall point I'm making in this is that if you don't advertise or if you don't put in the work, no one's going to know you exist. So this organic horseshit that he talks about in this episode is not possible if you really want this to be something. So he's saying, you know, enter communities and do some, you know, episode swaps and things like that. Well, you know, that may or may not work because the other guy has to promote the swap. And if he doesn't promote the swap, then you're left holding the bag, so to speak, right? So it's really collaborative stuff in the independent space is a hard thing, because it's very rare that you find someone willing to actually participate in the collaboration. Sometimes they just want to do it for their own benefit and they don't help you at all. And I've noticed that a lot as well. Like I joined a podcast community and all they wanted you to do was they wanted to do review swaps, right? So I would rate their show. They were supposed to rate mine. They wouldn't rate mine. It would go dark. So they were just basically using me just to get their boost on their end. When I would ask for a collaborative swap of episodes, or you go on my show, I go on yours, they would only want me on their show. They would not go on mine. So they would not promote mine. Those people are out there too. Now, so the organic thing doesn't really work. You're just going to sit there and beat your head against the wall, and you're going to run into people that are out for themselves. So if you really want your show to thrive, you have to figure out other ways, right? So there are other places that are actual companies that promote, that push, that work with you. Podcorn is one. They work with you in terms of sponsorships. You know, they take 10% off the top of whatever you're making, but you got that's the cost of doing business. So you keep 90, they get 10. So if it's $100, you get $90. You know, There's Mopod, which is more of a site that promotes your podcast through ad banners and things like that on websites and on their own webpage as well in certain parts of their business. So you'll get whatever you got to pay, and you get whatever you pay for. They, you know, if you want 100 downloads or 100 download promotion, they call it, you pay the $100. You know, it's a dollar a download basically. And sometimes you'll get 20 or 30 extra depending on how long the promo goes for. But that is another way to push your product. They also have larger promotions that you have to, but again, you have to pay the money. You have to come up with the cash to do it. You can't sit here with your thumb up your ass and just hope that people notice you. And these types of podcasters are getting out there, and yeah, they might have a better social media presence. I'm sure this is where most of his listens come from. And he's, you know, networks better than most, I'm sure. You know, he's got, you know, 21 reviews on Apple. You know, he's got 10 reviews on Spotify. So he does have 24 listeners on Good Pods. So this guy does network a little bit better than I do. But I can almost guarantee you that he's not pushing this thing like he should, because he's into the organic game. And I will tell you guys 100%, it does not work. Organic does not fucking work. I'm going to say it one more time as I get out of here. The organic game does not fucking work. And if you go into this thinking it's a fucking hobby, you're never going to turn this into anything. You have to do your work. You just have to. And you have to pay the money. Now, you can do the little $100 boost every once in a while on your show. You can promote it through your social medias. If you really are good at social media, like your Facebooks, your Instagrams, things like that, then that obviously will be a great way to push your stuff. People will notice you. There's also promotional banners that you can actually do on X, and you have to put the money out there. There's no way around it. These promotional companies and these ad buy companies are not going to do anything for you if you don't pay them. And there are this notion that he puts out there is absolute horseshit. The guest thing is even worse, because trust me, Denzel Washington's not going to jump on my show unless he's getting a couple of dollars. And I can guarantee you he ain't taking $100 to do it, because he knows his name on my show is going to make me more exposure, right? So that's just it, you know? So if you want to continue to get free guests back and forth and practice and do all that, you can interview your friends, you can do some swaps with some low-level podcasters and grow your experience that way. But if you really want to get the jump, you got to pay the money. And that, kids, is the episode. Thank you all for listening. Appreciate each and every one of you. All you new guys, thank you. I'll see you on the next one. Later.